Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. A section of land in the very southern tip of Nevada has always been important to at least a dozen tribes. It is the place of the Fort Mojave Nation's origin, called Aviquamay. It is both culturally and ecologically significant. But there are continued development pressures and damage by unchecked recreational use. Coming up, we'll hear about an effort that's gaining momentum to protect the land. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. President Biden announced Thursday he is restoring environmental protections to three national monuments that were removed by the Trump administration. Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears National Monuments are in Utah. Northeast Canyons and Seamounts National Monument is off the coast of New England. The New York Times reports the reduction of Bears Ears by nearly 85% in 2017 sparked an outcry by Native Americans as well as environmentalists and paleontologists. It was established in 2016 by President Barack Obama after years of negotiations, input, and advocacy on behalf of tribes, NGOs, and the public. The Native American Rights Fund said the Hopi Tribe, Navajo Nation, Pueblo of Zuni, Ute Indian Tribe, and Ute Mountain Indian Tribe led the effort to establish Bears Ears National Monument. It applauded the move by the Biden-Harris administration. Rights Fund staff attorney Matthew Campbell said the proclamation will, quote, roll back unpopular and illegal efforts to rip away needed protections for these ancestral lands and cultural resources. He said the group looks forward to seeing the sacred landscape properly protected and, quote, we look forward to seeing that it happens in a culturally appropriate way. The administration said in a press release it's committed to ensuring adequate staffing and resources for the area and to make Bears Ears a model for tribal participation in the management of the monument. A new report on the Indian Health Service reveals the agency willfully ignored sexual abuse by a doctor working for the service. The New York Times reports IHS commissioned the report, which found members of the agency also silenced and punished whistleblowers who sought to bring allegations against Stanley Patrick Weber to its attention. It concludes leaders in the agency ignored the complaints because addressing them would be, quote, awkward, arduous, inconvenient, messy, and embarrassing. Weber worked as a pediatrician with IHS and preyed upon Native boys for decades in Montana and South Dakota. He was convicted in 2019 and is serving multiple life sentences. The report was written early last year, but kept under wraps until now. It was finally made public through a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit brought by the Times and the Wall Street Journal. The report recommends IHS install whistleblower protection coordinators around the country and create an internal system to track allegations. A spokeswoman for the agency said it has started making changes, including a hotline to report child and sexual abuse, training for all employees and contractors in handling reports of abuse, and implementing stronger patient safety protocols. Timothy Davis, chairman of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana, where some of the abuse occurred, said his community wants an apology from IHS and accountability for those who hid the abuse. Davis told the Times, "To allow this pediatrician to do this to our children for all these years is unforgivable and atrocious." A state natural resources policy board in Wisconsin took no action Friday during a special closed-door session on lawsuits over a planned wolf hunt. The Journal Times reports six Ojibwe tribes sued the board to stop the fall hunt. They said the Department of Natural Resources is ignoring sound biological principles and mismanaging natural resources in violation of treaties signed in the 19th century. Another lawsuit by conservation groups also seeks to stop the hunt and void a 2011 law that mandates a hunt when wolves are not on the endangered species list. The Trump administration removed the gray wolf from the list. Wisconsin Public Radio reported that earlier this week, the Department of Natural Resources set a quota of 130 wolves for the fall hunt, far lower than the 300 the policy-setting board wanted. Hunters and trappers will be able to take 74 wolves, and the remaining wolves will be awarded to the Ojibwe tribes who have traditionally chosen to protect their share. The hunt is slated to start on November 6th. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Come Unity, Environment is Sacred is a series of on-demand films portraying a Native revolution to environmentally align with nature in celebration of International Earth Day. Available through April 30th at visionmakermedia.org who support this show.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Supporters of a plan to permanently protect nearly 400,000 acres of culturally significant land in southern Nevada say momentum is building. A coalition of tribes and conservation groups say the possibility for creating the Aviqua May National Monument has never been better. The idea certainly has the support of about a dozen tribes that consider the land significant. Local elected leaders are also on board. But securing national monument status takes either an act of Congress or a declaration by the president. Coming up today, we're going to hear about that process, what it does and does not protect. We're also going to hear about the land itself and why it's so important. We'd also like to hear from you. Are federal protections effective when it comes to sacred places? What do you know about Aviqua May? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have two guests joining us today from the Mojave Nation. Nora McDowell is the project manager for the Tubac Remediation Project, and she is a member of the Fort Mojave Indian Tribe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Nora.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also from Mojave Nation is Paul Jackson, Jr. He is a culture and language bearer and a cultural artist. He is a member of the Fort Mojave Tribe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Paul.
Thank you.
I'd like to start off our discussion today by asking Nora to please educate us. Where exactly in Nevada is Aviqua May located? What's its history, and why is it currently in the national headlines?
Kamazu, good morning. Inyepimolch Nora, Inyepimolch Masipa, Inyech Ahamakachadum, Aha Kulu Imanch, Aviqua May Imanch. Good morning, my relatives. Wonderful to be here with you this morning. The Fort Mojave Indian Tribe is located in three states, California, Arizona, and Nevada, and is divided by the Colorado River. It is approximately an hour and a half drive south of Las Vegas, and it's right off I-40. It's basically a tri-state area. So if you've ever been through Needles, California, or through Bullhead City, or on your way to Las Vegas, you've been through our reservation. It's called the Mojave Valley. And the Aviqua May location itself is located in Laughlin, Nevada.
And what's the history to these lands?
The history to these lands is that this is our place of creation. For centuries, we've lived and enjoyed the natural setting here. The river is our namesake. Ahamakav is who we are, and that means the people of the river. The mountains we revere as a place of creation known as Aviqua May, Spirit Mountain. All things, the air, the sky, the things above and below ground, these names, places in Mojave are the cornerstones of our existence and to mark the footprints of our ancestors upon this birthplace for the Mojave people. This is our homeland, our ancestral home. This is a nation in which our people spoke about, our elders, and we are still a part of this, and we feel that no one has a right to take away, you know, what was rightfully ours. Although we don't own it anymore, we're still connected to it, are, and it is our continuous occupation here in this area that the Creator Matavi placed us here and created the river and all things that we have, and we're here to protect those things. And the monument in itself has been considered designated a traditional cultural property and is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. And that listing limits the protection of the mountain only and ignores the associated pristine landscapes, you know, that were once of our homelands and where our ancestors lived. We had three different regions all up and along the Colorado River. South of Hoover Dam, in the Mojave Valley area, and south here at a place that we call our Topoc area. And so we have a beginning, which is our creation story that exists, and that is part of Spirit Mountain of Iquame. And then we have another area where we go when we leave this earth and transition into the next area of spirit world. And so for us, this whole valley is connected. We are a part of that. We are part, we come from the river and the water, and all things that the Creator made for us is what we have been given the responsibility to protect.
So to what are your hopes? What are your hopes, Nora, for protecting this culturally significant land with national monument status?
We've seen a lot of proposals, recent proposals, large-scale energy development projects, such as Crescent Pink Wind, on public lands that would have threatened the sacred of Iquame landscape. And even though it is listed, it only protects the mountain part of it. And so everything else that surrounds it and that's connected to it, you know, is a part of that. And so our goals is to protect the cultural landscapes, protect wildlife and nature, and protect the existing public area and access to that. But to the Mojave, this would protect our ancestral homelands into perpetuity and acknowledge the indigenous inhabitants of this region since time immemorial and afford landscape areas within the national monument the protection it deserves.
Now, this recent announcement that we heard in the news that the Biden administration has issued this proclamation, or will issue this proclamation today, under authority of the Antiquities Act, that will remove these legal uncertainties regarding these monuments in southern Utah, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante, restoring their federal protections. Does that offer hope with your efforts to create a Iquame National Monument?
Yes, it certainly does, and I'm so happy, you know, that this administration is taking this on and restoring the protections that it needed and the area. I don't know more of the details about how much is going to be restored, but just that in itself and restoring the protections for Bears Ears and other areas, you know, are efforts by the grassroots tribes and those that, you know, inhabit the land and have been here that still use the land, even though we don't own it anymore. It's still a part of us and our connection to our religious and spiritual well-being. And so for us, we were very happy to hear that news today, and we're very hopeful that it will help, you know, help our efforts to protect our area as well. And also the 30 by 30, which is the America the Beautiful Act that they just established as well, will also give us the support we feel that we need, that, and that would be to preserve and protect 30% of the public lands. And so this being part of that, we're encouraged by that.
I'd like to bring Paul into the discussion. Paul, can you describe a little bit about what of Iquame looks like for somebody that's never been to this land before? And what is it about this land that makes it so significant for you?
Well, you could see it from a far off distance. It's the tallest from our point of direction north of us. And to us, it's sacred, majestic. again, as Nora stated, it's our beginnings, and it's a place where we go, but we don't climb it. We could just go near it. That's how sacred it is to us. And I, we go out there, and I think about the, and what we call first times, when man and woman would have dreams even before they were born, when they were in their mother's stomachs, and they would dream of Avikwayame. And that was really a calling from our Creator for them to go up there when the time is right after they're born. And after they're born, they would get that calling and go up there, and that's where they become medicine men and women to help our Creator. And normal people, as like us, and would go up there, and we didn't have that dream, but we could go up there, which was risky. But we'd go up there and sit and pray, and after several days, our Creator would talk to us and instruct us on our way of life, and we'd ask Him if we could be a better person in whatever it is, you know, a good runner, a good warrior, a medicine man, a good wife, a good farmer. And it would come down, and that's where Grapevine Canyon comes in, right next to Avikwayame, where they go in and chisel into the walls, the canyon walls, the vision that they had seen, which was very hard to understand because it was usually for the just for that individual and our Creator. It's also a place of learning where we take our kids and teach them about how we used all the desert plants and names of all the desert animals in the Mojave language and English. Teach them about how we use the whole medicine of plants, you know, for everything. The whole desert area, all the plants you could see, we used every one of them in one way or another.
Do you have a comment or question for today's show? Call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also email us at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. We'll be right back after this break. Regard for Christopher Columbus may be at its lowest point since a federal holiday was set aside in his honor. For Indigenous Peoples Day, we'll get updates on the status of monuments and events that remain for controversial figures and the growing awareness for recognizing important Native contributions. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Are you a Native American entrepreneur? Have a business solution for an issue like racial equity or critical infrastructure? The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program is a federal program helping private lenders make the business loan you need. They support most businesses, whether starting up or expanding. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Division of Capital Investment supports this show.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We're hearing today about efforts to secure federal national monument protections for culturally important land in southern Nevada named Avikwame. What other lands deserve federal protections? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Connect with us on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Follow us on Facebook at Native America Calling, or send an email at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. We are joined today by both Nora McDowell and Paul Jackson from the Mojave Nation. Paul was talking a little bit about some of the cultural significance of Avikwame before our break. Paul, you were talking a little bit about some of the medicines and other resources there in the lands. What types of medicines come from this area?
Oh, just we had a medicine when the plants were just about everything, rheumatism, arthritis, headaches, stomach aches, burns and cuts. And it depends on the plant that you get the medicine out of, so you had to be very knowledgeable in order to do that. We even have make some sort of drinks out of them for sore throats, heartaches.
Well, thank you for those insights. I'd like to introduce a third guest today. Joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada, is Taylor Patterson. She is the executive director of the Native Voters Alliance Nevada, and she is Bishop Paiute. Taylor, welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning. This feels so serendipitous on the morning Bear's Ears gets restored.
Yeah, it really is serendipitous. I agree. Great, great news. Taylor, when did efforts to build a coalition of tribes intersect with this national monument push?
So, I mean, I have to give credit, of course, to the people down at Fort Mojave. They've been fighting for protection of this area for decades now. And I think, you know, in the last year or so is when a lot of folks in the conservation world started to take notice and realize, hey, like, the stars are aligning here. Of course, there's these wonderful, invaluable cultural aspects of this area, but there's also insanely ancient Joshua trees and these migratory patterns for different animals. This is the spot for protection. So I jumped on the project early in this year, and it's been a wonderful project so far, and I think we've seen now that you know, conservation groups are starting to take notice of, hey, let's let Indigenous folks lead on this project, and it's been amazing.
Now, we've talked about some very hopeful signs that this might become reality. What are the remaining barriers, though, that could potentially disrupt these plans?
I mean, the remaining barrier really is there are so many landscapes in the country that need protection and that need sort of that extra push. We just need the attention of the Department of Interior and the Biden administration to really make sure that they're paying attention to what we have going on, as well as the residents in the area, of course, to speak out, because we know, like, us Indigenous folks can say something 10,000 times, and until a white person says it, then people really start to listen, as unfortunate as that is. So just everybody speaking out and really pushing this project to their elected officials or to, you know, the administration.
Now, there are people that do live in this area, and I understand there's even a home that used to belong to a Hollywood actor. How does that fit in with preservation plans?
Yeah, so that is Walking Box Ranch, which is a fascinating area because, you know, it's very strange to imagine an old-timey Hollywood actor like Clara Bow being like, you know what, I'm going to go live in the middle of the desert for a while. But it was this insane retreat for a lot of actors of that early 20s and 30s period. And so those areas will be preserved within the monument. And the folks that are, they call themselves Friends of Walking Box Ranch, are very supportive of the monument project and look forward to having the additional protections for the area surrounding it. Because as Nora had mentioned earlier, that wind application that was put in is just right next door to Walking Box Ranch. So they would have to contend with a giant wind project if that had gone through in that area.
Now, I do want to add a note of disclaimer regarding these wind farms. We did reach out to Eolus North America to be part of today's discussion. We did not hear back from them by showtime. Taylor, you're talking about some of these protections that are currently in place. Could you describe in more detail what those protections are and how would they change with regard to Aviquame being elevated to national monument status?
Yeah, so as was discussed a little bit earlier, you know, and I'm sure Nora and Paul can speak more to this, but Aviquame is in a lot of different spaces. They the tribe and this like cultural importance is in California, in Arizona, and in Nevada. Luckily, the protections on either side of the monument are very strong on the California side and the Arizona side. However, what we have is sort of this donut hole in the center in Nevada, where, as mentioned earlier, Spirit Mountain itself has protection, but there's all these little areas that are still really significant and beautiful, but don't have any protection over top of them. So putting this national monument in the area would really close any loophole that exists right now to develop next to these areas or within these sacred areas. So really what we're seeing is shoring up protection for the areas that are already kind of protected, and also creating additional protections for the spaces that currently are a free-for-all, so to speak.
Now, Taylor, you are in Southern Nevada. You are in Las Vegas. You're close to these lands. But, of course, Nevada is a huge state. Do people elsewhere in Nevada, do they know about Aviquame?
Yeah, I think people are starting to kind of to pay attention. And it's interesting, when I started on this project in January, a lot of my, you know, urban Indian friends were like, we don't know what that is. What, where, who? And now that, you know, this is kind of being elevated by things like Bear's Ears or other sacred land struggles that are going on, people are really starting to take notice. And I get a lot of people that I don't even know, and they're like, oh, wait, you're working on that monument project, right? And I'm like, gosh, this is really like creating some momentum finally. And it's I feel like kind of gaining some heat. And it's solidarity, of course, because without Bear's Ears laying the way, without all of these other sacred spaces that came before, I don't think it would get the same platform.
Taylor, how did Bishop Paiute, your own tribe, how did they access this land?
So really, my tribe was a little bit more in the Ohns Valley area, but for the Southern Paiute in general, this area is a part of the Salt Song Trail, and that salt, those salt songs that the Southern Paiute sing, and they tell the spiritual stories and the cultural landscape of the Southern Paiute life cycle. And what I find interesting is this area was just such a cultural corridor. So many people find significance in this area, and it's talked about not just for the Mojave people, but for the Paiute people, and for all of us. This area holds so much importance and reverence, really. And so, you know, this is not just a space where one tribe is saying, oh, you know, this is our sacred space. Which, granted, one tribe should be plenty to get something protected, but this is a space where everybody is saying, hey, our people were there too, and our people had sacred medicines that Paul was talking about, or this is a part of our sort of life cycle and our journey. And for the Southern Paiute that existed very far down, like my tribe's up is more towards Central California, but for like the Chimoevi Paiute that are down further in California, they needed to access this area to get back to the point of creation close to me called Mount Charleston in the Spring Mountains here in Nevada. So this was an area that everybody needed to move through and to get their medicines.
Who are some of these other tribes that are involved in the coalition supporting this?
So we have the other Southern Paiute tribes so far. We've got the Chimoevi Paiute that are in support, the Moapa Band of Paiutes that are in support, and then also our Intertribal Council of Nevada did a resolution to support the monument project as well. And that Intertribal Council represents the 27 federally recognized tribes in the state of Nevada. So lots of tribal support. Luckily, you know, once all of us get our mindset to something, I think as tribes, then we really can get some business done. So
well, that sounds like a strong coalition. And so far, what has been the reaction from public officials, both locally and statewide?
I would say the reaction's been really positive. Everybody just wants to see that community support, that community buy-in, that the folks in these areas really want this monument. And we've seen, too, like, during the pandemic, a lot of people utilizing these public spaces and really going out in the land. A lot of my friends that are in the city, like, for the first time realized all these public lands that exist around us in Las Vegas and other spaces. So our public officials, they just want to know that this is something that people want, and making sure that the folks in the rural area that will actually be right up against that monument are happy with that.
I'd like to bring Nora back into the discussion. Nora, you are an elected leader for your tribe. What are some other encroachments that are impacting not only this land, but other important places in southern Nevada?
Actually, I was a former elected leader. I served on the Fort Mojave Tribal Council as the chairwoman for over 25 plus years. I currently am the project manager within our cultural resources department. But I just wanted to weigh in also on that we do have support from Congresswoman Susie Lee and also from Senator Catherine Cortez Mastis. And they've been out to the site. They've come out to visit, and they will be the ones that will be helping us as well, getting the support that we will need for the nomination and the monument to occur. So we do have the backing of those individuals as well. Excuse me, I forgot the question real quick.
I was interested in other encroachments for the land and as well as other important places in southern Nevada.
Yes, and in particular here, this area is considered wilderness. Also that are located around it, there's different designations, as Taylor was pointing out earlier, and having the donut hole there, you know, everybody looks at that as a potential area that they can come in and develop and do whatever. But we've had a lot of encroachments as far as development occurring, a lot of people moving to this area now, you know, leaving Southern California and coming to reside here in this area. So development, housing, and other things are booming in the Laughlin Bullhead city areas, as well as Nevada. It's continuing to grow. And so when they come out and look at these energy development projects, such as wind and, you know, solar and whatnot, those, you know, are put on lands, you know, that are near and within these wilderness areas. But yet, you know, they're the people that reside here, that live here, that are part of the communities of Searchlight and Calnevere and other areas there, you know, they don't want to see that in their backyard. It's not that we're against it. It's just on the location and the place that you put it at. We're all in favor of green energy development, but it's just where you put it at. We've had an experience south on some ancestral lands down in the Blythe area, and that whole corridor, because it runs along a transmission line, is, you know, pretty much open space to them. And when the people come here, they see the desert, and they look at it as a wasteland. But these areas, you know, are former ancestral lands of the people that were first here. And so there are a lot of our artifacts and villages, habitat areas, and locations such as around the lakes and streams and other areas, springs and whatnot, you know, where our people knew about and where they lived at. And so, you know, you see that destruction, and now you have that one particular project was called the Genesis Project down in Blythe, that they found over 3,000 plus artifacts. And all those were taken at the expense of the economics for this project versus, you know, preserving and protecting all those cultural resources and artifacts. You know, our ancestors, you know, we're just being erased. We're being wiped away. So for us, you know, protecting this area, connecting it on a larger scale, and preserving it, you know, for future generations, you know, to be able to see the life that is out there, these pristine landscapes, you know, you're not going to find this anywhere else. And so for us, you know, the view shed is very important to us as well. And so the cultural landscape to us is a connection to our tribal history and culture as well, because we know what's there. We know the history. We know every name, place that exist out there on the land, because that's what we're orally taught from our elders from way back when, our ancestors. They left these for us, and they even gave us marching orders through tribal resolutions, you know, to help protect these areas and to watch out for these cultural sites and features and landscapes and sacredness. All the mountains, you know, and water and just places of our existence is so important to the well-being of ourselves and to help other people, not just our own, but, you know, to teach. And so I'm really happy that we do have the collaboration that we have with the organizations that we've been working with. Taylor's coming on board now, and others, Alan O'Neill and Neil Desai and others, you know, that were part of management of the National Park Service and are out there, you know, trying to conserve all these places that matter and that somebody needs to speak for, the animals and the plants. You know, the mountains themselves, we have to speak for those things and protect them any way that we can. And so this will help solidify that and avoid, you know, having these large developments come in and affect, you know, which rightfully should be protected.
Nora, you and Paul do a wonderful job of illustrating the beauty of these lands in southern Nevada, Aviquame. We have to go to break right now, but we'll be right back. I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
Program support is by Montana State University in Bozeman, home to MSU's Native American Studies Department and over 750 Native students from 35 states. MSU is proud to announce the October 16th grand opening of its new American Indian Hall, a project over 15 years in the making. American Indian Hall, a crossroads of culture and student support. Montana.edu/AIH.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. There's still time to join our discussion about protecting sacred lands. We're talking with tribal members from southern Nevada and their connections to land they hold sacred. Call us, 1-800-996-2848. And with that, I would like to go to a caller now. We have Melvin. He's in Santee, Nebraska, and he's listening on station KZYK. Melvin, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. It was good to hear all this information and the things happening in Nevada. But one thing that I'm concerned about is them enacting regulations and protections that they put some teeth in it. You know, during that grave protection, when we were dealing with several cases, there was nothing we could do to really enforce anything. Fine, jail, or something who violated the great protection thing. But the same thing needs to be looked for on the new sacred site deals we're making, that, you know, any disturbance or anything disruptive by whoever, you know, there's got to be something to be paid. You know, jail, I would hope, so they can learn a lesson of leaving things alone. But it's great to hear these people in Nevada have been fighting so hard. Last I really heard anything about Nevada was Yucca Mountain, you know, and trying to put all that poison up there. But it's good to hear what good things happen in southern Nevada. I'll keep my ears open for news on you guys and strongly support you, but we need teeth in these new regulations.
Well, Melvin, thanks for calling in. And that's a really good point. What are the existing protections? How are they enforced? How much teeth
are in these enforcements. Taylor, could you respond to that? What currently, how are any types of violations enforced with regard to these protections and monument status? How would those enforcements change?
Yeah, so, you know, he brings up a great point. A lot of this comes down to resources, and currently those areas that do have like wilderness protection or some of the other designations in that area, Bureau of Land Management is responsible for monitoring that and sort of either giving out fines or tickets. And as I think all of us know, BLM can really be hit or miss, especially depending on the area you're in. But the monument designation allows us to have that added resource there to get more money and agents and people in that area to really just patrol and protect and make sure that there's enough eyes on the area, basically.
I'd like to ask Nora regarding this proposed wind farm. What's the status on that? And who's proposing it? How far along is it in the proposal?
Actually, they had proposed this a number of years ago, and the local citizens and the tribes that are exist on the lower Colorado River and other organizations, conservation organizations, had come together, and I'm happy to report that that the industrial development project was defeated, and no permit was issued for the development of it. But we do know, and we're notified recently, that they're the same company, but with a different name, is coming back and looking to do that. And so we have opposed that development again, and we've submitted letters to the regulatory agencies, who in this case would be the Bureau of Land Management, reemphasizing our opposition to any type of development in this area. So far, you know, nothing has happened with that. So we're vigilantly watching it to make sure that it doesn't. And we do have a lot of the local support and local government support and organizations, you know, to stop the project from going in. And so whether it's through legal matter, you know, intervention, or, you know, just a campaign such as what we're doing now. I just also wanted to thank the caller as well, you know, for his comments. And it is a big undertaking, but yet, you know, our responsibility as tribal nations, governments, is that, you know, we protect the lands that, you know, are remaining, but yet those other lands are still part of our connection and to who we are as people of these homelands that we have. We do have a website, and it's Avikwame. It's spelled AVIKWAAME.com. And there's a story map on there where you can see pictures and you can see interviews that have been conducted. And you also can sign a petition, and which would honorspiritmountain.org is the other other website you can go to sign the petition to establish the monument. So anything, that's what you can do to help support us as well. And we're spreading the word and getting it out, and we're very hopeful that, you know, we will continue to protect these areas, and especially this particular proposed monument area.
Paul, what are your hopes for what Avikwame has to offer in the future?
First of all, people come here from the Midwest and all over for the weather. Maybe it's too cold where they are, and the weather's warm here, and they come here year after year, snowbirds. And when they get older, they come to retire. And recreation, and the recreation has gotten so big now that it's just destroying the land, and the rivers polluted, and the sky. I would like to see us, well, we're and going to be doing this in the near future, and we've been trying already, and that is to educate the public more of Spirit Mountain. Maybe by doing presentations. We do presentations at the local high schools in this tri-state area and museums and in libraries, but I'd like to be a part of the class where we could tell the young kids all about it. We need more rangers. There's just not enough to go around here. And part of my job also is I go out and check the land for illegal dumping, trash dumping, vandalism, graffiti, all of that, and squatters, off-road racing. But most of the people that do come are respectful, but there's those few that just come and they just don't care. And if you want to come enjoy this era, you also have to respect it. And I'd like to see that and just educate them more. And
Paul, how often do you take children out to these lands, and what do you tell them about Aviquame and its significance, young people?
I tell them this is a sacred area. You know, it's our creation stories and how we came to be and how we went out into the world. You know, we're just one big tribe, and we split out, you know, going in different directions. That's why there's a lot of tribes that, you know, along the Colorado River that also believe in Aviquame. We talk about the birds and the mountains, right? The next mountains over, the tallest mountain on Grapevine Canyon, where all the petroglyphs are, and another one right across the Colorado River on the Arizona side, Inscription Rock, what we call Avi Amut Anor. It means riding on the rocks, where people would go after praying at the other tribes coming from different area would go to Spirit Mountain and pray to our Creator and go there and to Inscription Rock and sing and dance to on a dancing circle way on top. And that's been threatened. We had to go and build a gate around it so people won't climb it. You know, a lot more education. And I feel if we do that, it more people will come here with more respect and feel the way we do about this area.
Taylor, what's next regarding the push to get national monument status? How far away do you think you are?
I mean, it's almost impossible to say, but I hope that now that we've seen the restoration of Bears Ears and the Grand Staircase, and now I think the Biden administration and a lot of people are looking at what's next. So I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I never want to, what's the saying, count my chickens before they hatch. I'm hoping that more eyes on this and being on programs like yours, that more people will call attention to this area and support the monument.
How much opposition is there to the proposal, and how do you confront people who are opposed to this?
I mean, there's not much, realistically. And I think a lot of people, sort of what Nora was saying earlier, none of us are against green development or development in general. I think we need to be really cautious, and we need to be thoughtful about where that development takes place. And this is not the area for that. And I know it's hard to kind of imagine, and for a lot of your folks that are in Alaska or in the Midwest, and to think about these giant Joshua trees and this landscape that I think to a lot of people seems empty. A lot of people that aren't from the desert or are not native from the area, they don't see the beauty and the significance in these spaces, but there is so much there, and it's so, so important. And I think just communicating that to people and making sure that they realize, like, this is not just this space of land that has nothing on it, so go ahead and flop some solar or wind or whatever the case may be, is sort of what needs to really happen, and what Paul was talking about of just that education of these super sacred and special places. And so, I mean, of course, from the wind company itself, there is opposition there. But for the most part, I really haven't come across a lot of people that are totally opposed. I think people are very cautious, of course, because as we have, we have sort of a libertarian streak in Nevada, definitely. And so when it comes to these sort of governmental designations and protections, people get a little suspicious. But, you know, upon talking to them about it and educating them about, hey, like, these recreational uses will still be the same. You still enjoy the land. This is still going to be okay. People are a lot more comfortable.
Did you learn anything from the push to designate Bears Ears? And if so, how have you applied it to Aviquame?
I think the push to designate Bears Ears was really special because I think it's the first time that the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition was really leading that. You had what I think off the top of my head is five tribes that were pushing and they were leading it. It wasn't a conservation group that comes from D.C. to say, oh, yeah, this is a special place. And so I think I learned, which, I mean, I already knew because I'm a tribal member, but I think the conservation groups learned too. Like, Indigenous people know. The tribal people from this area know. And you know, like, land stewardship and those things, you just can't understand unless you're one of us. And I think, finally, people are starting to realize that and realize that our ways are our ancestral knowledge is the most important thing. And so that's what makes me excited about Bears Ears and excited about the future of conservation.
We have time for one more question. And I want to ask Nora, while you are waiting for these federal protections to be in place, what are you currently doing to protect the land?
As Paul had mentioned earlier, you know, we go out there and he checks, you know, and monitors the areas. And we work hand in hand with those agencies to ensure, you know, that protection is given to the landscape out there. And that, you know, our efforts for our tribe and our mandate that had been handed down and given to us by our elders, they created a group on the reservation, and it was called Amat, and that means to the land in our language, and it designated areas of that we wanted to get restored and brought back into the tribal co-management or management along with the federal agency. So those are some of the things that we work on. We communicate directly with those agencies. We deal with three of everything, three governors, three legislatures, you know, local governments, counties. And so our tribe is continuously educating and responding to these different projects that are being proposed in a lot of the public land areas that the BLM manages or the Park Service manages as well. So it does create a lot of work for us, but yet it is the way that we communicate with them to help protect those areas that are concerned to the tribe.
That's all the time we have for today's show. I'd like to thank our guests, Taylor Patterson, Nora McDowell, and Paul Jackson Jr. We're back again on Monday, marking Indigenous Peoples Day, and getting updates on efforts to remove monuments that honor those with problematic, even oppressive, legacies. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director. And Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our national underwriting sales director. Antonio Gonzalez is the anchor for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief of operations. The president and CEO of Kahanic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Sully. I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
Support by the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian, presenting Youth in Action, Indigenous Peoples Day, Black Indigenous Youth Advancing Social Justice, a virtual program that highlights youth of blended Black and Native heritage who use art, activism, and policy to advance Black and Indigenous solidarity and effect positive change in their communities. Available on October 11th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time at americanindian.si.edu.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community, and urge you to please contact your tribal or urban clinic to get your COVID-19 vaccination if you haven't already. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.